Welcome to the Gifters Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Kai. This podcast is sponsored by the GPS Online Program, which teaches you how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business. For more information, go to ChristopherKai.com. Our guest today is Anthony McLaren. He is a lawyer, author, and he has summited all seven summits. Anthony, welcome to our show today.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So just so you all know, Mount Everest is the tallest mountain in the world. We all know that. It's, I think, 29,029 feet. Just summiting that is like ridiculous because there's 7.8 billion people in the world and very few people do that. Now, that already is challenging, but this man, Anthony, has not done one, two, three, or four. He's done seven. So I always get inspired by the backstory, the origins. I'm curious, Anthony, when did you realize you had some level of tenacity, determination to have any desire to be that ambitious in life?
So I think from a climbing standpoint, I was always doing things that were risky. I was always climbing fences, climbing buildings, shimmying up rain drainage pipes off of buildings, you know, on military bases. And we were always doing stuff and we always like to get a perspective. So there was always, because there's a huge risk factor in climbing. So
how
that's always
good. When you're climbing up these buildings.
Eight, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, you know, it just kept going. And then I found organized sports and that kind of put it to bed. But after I was done with law school, I went to Europe and I traveled through Europe on my own for seven countries, 14 cities. And when I was in Switzerland, I had this intention to climb up or take a gondola to the top of a mountain and then walk down. And I had seen that this ski structure at the top of the Schilthorn Mountain. So I was gonna do that. And so I was sharing my intentions with the locals and I was all proud of myself that I was gonna do this thing. And this is how I remember it, like very big mustache and very burly man. And he said something like, "A real man climbs to the top and then takes the gondola down." And I was like, challenge accepted. So I did. So I climbed up the top. It wasn't technical, but it was very endurance oriented and I was hooked. And then I returned back to Sacramento, California, and I actually trained under a US Marine who was a mountain warfare specialist. So he knew all of these skill sets that you need to do technical climbing. And that's how I got into just climbing mountains. I think my personality has always been driven to challenge, period. But for mountains, that's how.
Well, the reason why I think it's so fascinating, just you climbing a mountain is already fascinating, but you're also a lawyer. So when I think of lawyers, I think you have to think in a certain way where you're literally going through a mountain of words. You have to pick one word and say, you know what? You can get sued $1 million. Therefore, that's not. And that's like your eyes, your mind looking at a piece of paper. Whereas the mountain, there's like elements that can kill you literally. So I'm just curious, how do you have that ability to, I guess, I know you said that you had this personality, but I want our listeners to see your brilliance and hopefully maybe even emulate some of that brilliance. So you talk about this technical mountain. Is this when you're in your teenage years, in your 20s? I mean, how old were you when you started really getting this bug for mountain climbing?
So, you know, I just, going to a young age, I would lay in bed and I would think of a tree. And then the tree would cause me to think of a leaf. And then the leaf would cause me to think of the color green. And the color green would cause me to think of colors. And then that would cause me to think of words. And so it was just kind of this exploration. I do this thing in my head. I've always done that. And I think that that's a really good metaphor for what it takes to actually climb a mountain and to technically climb a mountain. So to climb most of these mountains, you have to have endurance and you have to be fit and you have to be resourceful and you have to have, you know, a lot of courage and a few other things. But I actually also technically climb. I'm a technically proficient.
What does that mean? What does that mean, technical climbing? I don't know. What does that mean?
Yeah, so technical climbing is basically taking on climbs that have fatal aspects to them. not all seven summits, arguably, you don't have anything where you're going to fall and kill you on most of them. You could die from exposure and a few other things. But technical climbing is climbing vertical surfaces. And so when you go climb, you know, and you do this thing, it's very mentally engaging. And what it allows you to do is it allows you to shut the world out. Because if there's anything that causes you to focus, it's something that could kill you. So you're literally going up, and you, and it's there's a lot of engineers that climb, and so you're engineering your way up this climb, and then when you're done, the world comes back in, but you feel better because you've now done this really intense thing, and you've gotten some fitness out of it, and you have a perspective, and so the world comes back in, and you're like, I feel better, I'm fine, you know. As far as like, when did that come in? When did I start to really embrace that? Like I said, I think it's always been there. It's just that I had to find it. It was always waiting for me, and then I had to find it, and or it found me, and it was a match made in heaven.
You know, you remind me of this guy who won the Oscar for a documentary. I think it's like called Freehold or Freeholding, where he climbs.
Freestolo, Alex Honnold.
Yeah. So one of the things about being in the zone, where this podcast, this show is all about, how can our guests learn to be like you? A lot of people are afraid of death. A lot of people won't do these things. So I'm curious, it's all about the zone. So if I'm writing, I'm speaking, I'm in the zone. In your case, as you're saying, you can't think of anything else because your next step, your next grab is the only thing in your mind. So what type of preparation did you do to even get to that scale, that level?
So, you know, I like to tell everybody that asks me about climbing that I consider myself to suck equally at all climbing disciplines. So I'll say that again. I consider myself to be equally poor at all climbing disciplines. And I say that with a bit of self-deprecating humor. The reality is, for someone like Alex Honnold and what he did in Free Solo, I met him at the premiere of that movie in Los Angeles. I got a picture with him. He's at a whole nother level than where I am. To get into the zone, and he talks about the warrior spirit in his movie. I love that line. It's like the warrior spirit, you know, and to get into the zone of whatever it is that you're trying to do, I think there's just a lot of techniques that you can employ, whether you're doing it to climb, whether you're going to run, whether you're going to write a book, whether you're going to have the courage to ask somebody out who you've always wanted to ask out, whether you're going to have the courage to travel somewhere that you've always wanted to travel. And as I say those things, I think what comes to mind is, you just have to act. You just have to take the first step. That's probably the biggest piece of advice that I can tell anybody about getting in the zone, is that just do it. Just do it. And then you'll figure out, once you start doing it, you're gonna learn a lot of things about how to do it better. And if you ever do it again, you will. But if you don't ever act, you'll never know. And that's how you get into the zone. And once you start taking those steps, I think that you then increase the zones that you'll jump into.
Yeah. So I agree with you. And again, the whole mountaineers and the summits, it's the perfect metaphor for life. Like you said, whether you want to get married, whether you want to have kids, whether you want to write a book. So let's talk about your book. If you can show your book to our audience, I'd love to really dive into that and tell us.
Seven Summits for Death.
Yeah. And again, great title. We get so many applications. And you asked me what stood out. I'm like, look, Summits already stands out. You're a lawyer, but you did it for your dad. And we spoke about our own personal loss about our parents. So we had that connection. Like, that's the beauty of life, Anthony. And hopefully our listeners know, I've never met you, Anthony. We've never talked, but the fact that we both, unfortunately, have both our parents no longer here, we already have this, you know, this connection. And that was also very telling, where, wow, you wrote a book for your dad. So let's talk about that. Like, what are some qualities that you admired about your dad for you to even write a book for him?
Yeah, so thank you so much for asking. It makes me feel emotional to speak of my father. He died at a relatively young age. He had my sister and I at a relatively young age. And the qualities that my father embodied that I hold him in such a high regard for, he was very stable in an otherwise unstable environment. And what I mean by that is, he was a very young father. He was a young military man, so he got transplanted every 4 years. So he had to be the force to take his wife and two children and relocate them to completely foreign lands. Literally, we lived in Italy for a while, but everywhere you go, it's completely new. My sister had a personal issue that needed to be dealt with. So that was, I believe, a little bit more challenging for everybody. My dad, my sister was a beautiful person, but that's another layer of sophistication. And this is where I think speaks volumes the most about my father. My mother, unfortunately, may she rest in peace, she had very significant mental health issues. And they weren't diagnosed because it was kind of something that we just didn't talk about. And I now know, with a lot of reflection, very truly, that my mother was probably bipolar, and she was sociopathic, and She also was an addict. She was an alcoholic. She was an anorexic. I mean, it was just really unpleasant. And so my father, here he is, managing all of these challenges. And, you know, as a son to the father, there's always the resentment. There's always that sort of thing that just happens with human beings. And
what do you mean?
Well, I'm just speaking in general terms. You generally, like, you might admire your father, but you also resent him because he's your father, you know, and because he's the authority and you don't like that, right? So I'm not immune to that. My dad and I actually, you know, of course we butted heads plenty. I wish he was still around so that I could just enjoy being a man with him. But anyway, what I do know is that I must have been observing those qualities in him all throughout my adult life. I left the house when I was 18. I never turned back. And I then reflected on what my father gave to us, which was so much stability and love, real love. And, you know, I don't think there are any other qualities that you need in a father, just there for you. That's what I admire and miss so much about my father. And hopefully someday I'll have children and I'll be able to provide at least that. That's all I ever want to do is kind of emulate that. And I want my children to be proud of me. So, you know.
That's great. And talk to us about your book, because essentially it's a gift to your father. Talk to us about that.
So, you know, I finished the 7 summits. And when I was doing them, I was actually using a dictation app to capture what climbing the mountains was like. And then I'd reflect back on things that I'd gone through in my childhood. And it was just this kind of gobbledygook. And then I took that and I got home after December of 2019, before the pandemic in January. And I said, I'm going to write a book. I've always wanted to be an author, actually. So I'm going to do this thing. And again, to your question about getting in the zone, first step, I'm going to do it. And if I declare I'm going to do something, I do it. Otherwise, I don't say I'm going to do it. Once it's out of my mouth, like, great, now I got to do that. So I was like, I'm going to do this. And so I sat down and I dedicated, you know, 7 hours a week. And I figured it would take me about 12 weeks to get to a certain point. And then I finished writing the book, and then I had it edited, and then I had a publisher. In summary, the book obviously is about climbing the 7 summits, but it also weaves a story of like starting on a mountain and failing on it, and then going into what my life was like when my father had Parkinson's towards the end of his life, and losing him, and how that emotionally impacted me, and then rising from the phoenix to say, I'm going to do something that's really, really hard to deal with something that was really, really hard, like Theodore Roosevelt did. And so that was how I did the 7 summits. And so the book talks about that, and then it kind of jumps you back to getting on each of the mountains that I climb. And for anybody listening, the 7 summits are commercial mountains. That means that you can hire commercial guiding companies to do all of them if you want. And if you have enough money, you can do that. I'm a lawyer, but I have not yet really done that well. So 3 of the mountains I did completely by myself or with one other person. No guides, no support, no paid for, nothing. Figured it out, did all the logistics. And then Everest, I sourced it directly from Kathmandu, so I cut the price in half, and I only climbed with one Sherpa, and then kind of a la carte logistical services from a company called Peak Promotion. Highly recommend them. Indonesia, I sourced it directly out of Bali, because the highest mountain in Australia is actually in Indonesia. When I went to Russia, it's the wildest story. I climbed with these crazy Russian guys that I found there. And then Antarctica was like the cherry on top, because no matter what, when you go to Antarctica, you have to pay for logistics. So that was actually the most pleasant experience. And because it was so pleasant, I actually built an igloo and slept in it in Antarctica. So anyway, that's trying to summarize the book. But
well, let's talk about the experience where you said that you didn't have a guide, you did it yourself. So pick one of those mountains. I'm curious, because like I said, in life, we might have guides in our life. We might have mentors, but sometimes you don't. So I'm really curious, out of the 7 summits, pick one of those summits that you feel that was worth sharing. All of them are worth sharing, but I'm curious, the one that you didn't have a guide, and what did you learn about that experience? So pick one mountain and talk to us about that.
So yeah, it's so hard to just focus on one, but the one that always comes to mind that was, you know, the most spiritually challenging was the highest mountain in South America, Aconcagua.
Yeah.
Aconcagua, and it's in Argentina. And the reason that that mountain was the hardest, and I share it to your question, is I went there completely by myself. I had 100 pounds of gear in these 2 huge duffel bags that I had to move up the mountain in stages. And when I was getting on the bus, the second day I landed in country, I had a little shoulder bag, but I was very tired. And so I wasn't paying enough attention, and I set it down, and somehow it was taken from me. And they ended up taking a really nice camera. They ended up taking my navigation equipment. They took an older iPad, and the navigation equipment allowed me to stay in touch with the world because it has satellite connections. And then they took my permits. And so I'll try and make a long story short. I was able to figure out the permit situation and get in the mountain. But remember, I'm there by myself. So you talk about just a kick in the gut. And you're so devastated. And it's like the second day there, I'm in a Spanish-speaking country. Like, there's so many things that can prevent you from climbing a mountain aside from the mountain itself. And that's a really prime example of this bag got stolen. And if I didn't have the wherewithal and the internal intestinal fortitude, as the Marines like to say, to just find a way through and figure it out and just find comfort in other things, I wouldn't have made it. And the picture of me on that summit of that mountain is remarkable. I look so worked. I look so destroyed because that mountain took so much out of me. So yeah.
How long did it take?
I think I was there for 18 days or something like that, from Mendoza to Mendoza.
So is it possible to do this? Because let's say I'm not good in directions. I'm very clear in my direction in life. But as you know, in LA, there's many hikes. I've gotten lost so many times where I'm like, I don't know where I'm going. So for someone that's directionally challenged, is it something, is it feasible, or it just seems like it's just so daunting? But I'm curious, for people that might lack a directional sense, it's both metaphorical and actual realistic in my case, let's say, is it something you can learn?
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing about the Seven Summits is that because they're commercially guided mountains, there is an abundance of literature on them. And another thing, so I consider my book to be about mental health and Parkinson's disease, about overcoming adversity. And it's also kind of a how-to guide. So anybody out there who's listening to this and wants to know how you can climb the Seven Summits and you can figure it out, I did. And to your question, the internet is an amazing resource. You have to know where you're looking. You have to know what to look for, but you can, you print maps out in advance. You study the terrain. I mean, you study it. It's like, you know, it's like that tree metaphor I gave at the beginning of this thing. Like, you just plan it out to a T, and then, you know, like they say, your whole playbook falls to you know what once you actually start doing it. But at least you're prepared. So yeah, it's doable. It's hard though. It's really hard. Really exhausting. Yeah.
And what about Mount Everest? That's just, it's like the Olympic. I know you mentioned that guy Alex is like in a different league, but you're essentially describing, okay, he's an Olympian. Maybe he won a gold medal, like a Michael Phelps, but you're still an Olympian. Because again, there's not many people out of 7.8 billion people that have climbed one, much less seven. So just so you know, you're just being modest, right? But the actual summit itself, that really is that holy grail of accomplishment. It's both metaphoric and real. What did you feel when you're on top of literally the top of the world? I'm curious.
So first, Christopher, you said 29029, so good for you for looking it up, but they actually assessed the height. It's 29032 now. So it's still 8848 meters. So there's a big thing with the Chinese and Nepal. They like 8 8s, you know, and all that lucky knit thing, but good for you. But they actually released that 3 weeks ago. So it's 29032. That's the official height. And as far as that mountain, I was there basically for 2 months. I was there, I wasn't really off the grid because you can get on the grid if you want to get on the grid anywhere, but I was basically off the grid for 2 months. And you're just training while you're there, and you're suffering and you're deteriorating and you're getting more and more hurt and not showering and, you know, you're falling apart. And then at the very end of all of that is when you make the push. And I was able to make the summit a week before that huge traffic jam that dominated the news 2 years ago that most people would remember, because I was very decisive and I wasn't part of a group. I just had one Sherpa and I was like, I want to go now. And they tried to talk me out of it. And I said, no. And I just went with intuition and I was able to call the shots because I just had a Sherpa. I didn't have anybody. And we got very lucky with the weather window. And to your question about what did it feel like when I got to the top? Now I can take that moment in right now and see it. And it was amazing. But when you get to the top after all of that work, and it's 50 degrees below zero and your mask is fogging up, and I did wear oxygen at 26,000 feet or above. By the time you get up there, you are so destroyed. I know people who've done it more than once and they know what to expect. So you look like a hero, but you're so destroyed. It's like, let's get some pictures. I got a little video. I poured my parents' ashes out the top of every mountain, including Mount Everest, top of the world. And I was like, we have to get down now. So that's what I was thinking. And even getting down, I was just destroyed. So I wasn't ever really able to reflect on the beauty and wonderfulness of that experience. Now I'm obviously very proud of it and love talking about it. But at the time, also because the Seven Summits was the objective, not just Everest, I was like, this doesn't mean anything yet. I got to get one more.
You know, Anthony, I was rereading the Four Agreements by, I think it's Don Miguel Ruiz. And it talks about how so many of us have to agree to what we want because the agreements we have is with our mom, our dad, our teacher, our society. Right. And you kept going through a whole conversation that we've having about that commitment to decide. I am saying I'm going to do it, therefore I'm going to do it. So I'm curious, what have you found? What have you found in your journey going through all this chaos? What have you found in yourself, the agreement that you've made with yourself? What do you feel that you found in yourself with all these various summits?
You know, I found that I am a man of integrity. I mean, I solidified the fact that I'm a man of integrity. As I said earlier to you, if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. Otherwise, I don't say I'm going to do it. And I also believe when you say you're going to do something and you say you're going to do it within a certain period of time, it's okay to not necessarily get it within the time unless for some reason that time goal is critical. If you say you're going to do something and you do it, but it was 3 years after you said you were going to do it, you can still say you did it. And that was all that it was about. And so, you know, as far as finding things in myself, I found resourcefulness. I found energy levels that I never knew that I had. I also found that people, I have wonderful relationships with people in my life, that people care about me and love me and that I love those people, and that when you're alone and you're being threatened, that's really all that you have, you know? And so those are the things that I reflect upon that I was able to find in this journey. And I'm so much more grounded now because of it, really am. My friends see it, you know, they're just like, you sound different, you know? I feel different.
Well, yeah, after this, I don't even know you, but I appreciate your spirit, because what I hope that people learn from you, Anthony, is that you're not just this mountain climber. It's really an analogy for life where you're going to have struggles and chaos. But if you have that decisiveness of mindset and skill set, and you do it for love for yourself, love for your father, that's what we're here for, to share love and to spread love. And so, Anthony, thank you so much for being on our show today. Really appreciate you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Gifters Podcast. If you want to learn how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business, go to christopherkai.com to learn more.